You're listening to the ESO Network, your station for all things geek.
Welcome to Earth Station 1, a weekly podcast dedicated to all things sci-fi, fantasy, and much, much more. Sit back and relax and enjoy the show.
Hey everyone, welcome to another episode of the Earth Station 1 podcast. That's right, folks. We are here in, right in the middle of summer movie season, and we are going to be talking all about Elton John. Not just Elton John the man, but now the movie Elton John. That's right, we are looking at Rocket Man. And it was magical in a lot of ways. It was a very big musical. Earworm City, folks. That's right. You can't get through this movie without humming a couple Elton John songs over the next 5-6 days after. It's pretty cool. So Elton has always been one of my favorites, and it's going to be a lot of fun to talk all about it. But I couldn't do this without my co-host, my cohort, my Bernie. It's Mike Gordon.
Howdy. You threw me off there. I'll be your Bernie.
And not the dead guy we take around to the beach and everything.
Exactly. I'm like, it's just podcasting at Bernie's. No, this is going to be very cool. It's the first time we've ever did a combination music spotlight and movie review. So, but I think it's warranted here. Last year when, we did a separate episode on Queen and then an episode on Bohemian Rhapsody, and that was a lot of fun, but, it'll be even more fun, I think, to put them both together here. And we've got a lot of great people to talk all about it.
We do, but we definitely want to hear from you at home. Please write us at earthstation1@esonetwork.com, or you could always call us at 404-963-9057. Leave feedback. Let us know what you think about Elton John. We definitely would love to hear from you guys. So we got a lot to talk about. We got a lot to cover. As we like to say, thank you to all our patrons. And, you know, you could become a patron of the ESO Network for as little as 25 cents a week. And we've got some great new levels up there. So please, please check it out. Real easy. Just go to patreon.com/ESO Network. All right, let's get started with this episode. Take it away, Mr. Mike.
Well, before we get started talking about the movie and reviewing that, and we've got our movie crew, our normal movie crew, to do that a little bit later on in the show, we are going to talk all about the man, the musician, Reginald White, born in 1947. We are going to talk all about his career and his as much as we can about how much he's been an influence to ourselves as well as pop culture. We've got with us our musical, our rock, iconic rock moment person here. Michelle is here.
Hello.
Howdy. How you been?
I'm good.
And you're going to be on the whole show, right?
I know. I hope I got to pace myself. Hope I can.
Remember, it's a marathon, not a sprint.
Not a sprint.
Yeah. So don't get all worn out talking about the man, because you got to talk about the movie a little bit later.
Yes.
Okay. And we've also got our music crew with us. We've got Ricky and Bambi joining us.
Hello.
Hello. Meow meow.
Absolutely. How you guys been?
We've been good.
Yeah.
Awesome. I like this show is packed, so we're going to get right to it, talking about Elton John. And I guess we'll just open it up like we usually do. The first time that you had ever are familiar with Elton's music or, you know, the man. Michelle, why don't you start? What was your first? Do you remember your first time hearing an Elton John song or?
Not specifically, but I was pretty young, and he was probably my first pop idol. He predates Queen for me.
Okay.
So that was definitely, I date myself, early 70s. Elton John's Greatest Hits Volume 1 is the first record I ever bought with my own money.
Oh, wow.
At the Duck Creek Plaza Target.
Okay.
In Bettendorf, Iowa.
Wait, no, was it an actual album record?
Yes.
Okay. And you still have it?
I still do. Yes.
Nice. So, yeah, that's a big deal. So, your first album, do you remember, did you hear a song on the radio? Did you?
What didn't we hear on the radio then? I mean, he had so many hits that he was just this constant presence. And, he put out so many albums and so many singles that you couldn't get away from them.
Yeah. It's true. He's just been a guy that's always been around, I think. Bambi, what about you? What's your first memory of Elton John?
Well, my first memory of when I actually knew who Elton John was is kind of depressing because I guess I've always, Elton John's one of those musicians where just, he was always around. I can't remember a time when Elton John wasn't around, like just his music was on the radio. But the first time I was actually aware of who Elton John was a friend of mine's father was really into Elton John, and he committed suicide, and his son was, again, a really good friend of mine and was learning to play music and apparently was trying to learn a bunch of Elton John songs and Tiny Dancer specifically. So I was aware that the song Tiny Dancer was by Elton John, and that was the first time I put a name to his voice. Depressing, I know, but there it is. Yeah.
Wow, bring it down.
So there we go.
I think we'll find that, though. Elton John's music is that powerful, but music that kind of that is suitable for like some of those occasions, you know.
Yeah.
I think a lot of people how famous is it that, you know, he rewrote Candle in the Wind and sang it at Diana's funeral, right?
Yeah.
Like that's a big deal. And most people will probably remember that more than they will like almost anything else he's done.
Yeah.
And he wasn't really like dressed up weird for that.
Apparently that's on the list of best-selling physical singles of all time. That's actually the number two, it looks like.
Yeah. Yeah. Ricky, what about you?
Well, I have a much older brother whose wife was really into Elton John. So when I was young, I remember being familiar with the name Elton John because she would talk about him. And I remember being familiar with many of his songs. But what's kind of funny is I never really put the name Elton John to a song until I'm Still Standing. And the video for that song. I think that was the first time I ever realized, wait, Elton John's the guy who did all these songs. So I'm Still Standing was the first time I really put it all together.
Yeah, wow. And it's a powerful video. I think when most people think of Elton John videos, I think that's the one that probably comes to mind more than any of the others. In fact, I'm kind of trying to think of some of the other videos he did, and I'm blanking out on some of them, but I know he, you know, during the 80s, everybody was doing them. So,
oh yeah.
Mike, what about you?
Well, for me, you know, probably I was like 5 or 6 when I first heard Elton John. So probably 73, 74. My parents used to do tons of road trips, and we used to listen to Elton John all the time in the car. And the way I remember it most, because one of the first I ever heard from him was Crocodile Rock. And, you know, from there we heard Benny and the Jets, and, you know, then just grew and grew and grew, and Pinball Wizard and, you know, stuff like that, and Goodbye Yellow Brick Road and Don't Go Breaking My Heart. You know, the list just kept on going as Elton kept on growing, and he was always part of it, because with us, we always had music playing. We always had people, you know, playing radio, playing records, playing tapes, and it just grew with that. And Elton was always a part of it. And it was just neat to see. And, you know, I actually started losing with Elton John when he's like the MTV era of Elton John. You know, I remember, you know, I'm Still Standing. I remember the video. And then I also remember, you know, That's Why They Call It the Blues. But then he started becoming even more 80s pop type thing. And I probably stopped listening to him at that point. Mm. So, you know, but it was always, Elton John was always there. You remember him from, you know, The Lion King and, you know, stuff like that with the movies and stuff. And I remember seeing him in South Park and The Simpsons. So he was still relevant. If that makes any sense.
Oh, absolutely. And, you know, I mean, like, I think it's been said even by like that. I mean, it just seems like he's been around. I mean, for me, he literally has been around my entire life. I think his first album was just around the time I was born. So, yeah, I mean, there's always been Elton John music as long as I've been around. It's interesting for me to think that the first record company greatest hits collection of his was produced in 1974. That's very early on. And to me, that's very early on in his career. But I mean, he had already like done like a huge amount of work and had a huge amount of hits by that. Mm-hmm. For me, I think I probably was aware of a lot of his songs, but not really aware of him as the guy who did them. That's what I like about these episodes, Mike, reminiscing like this really does date us.
You have no idea.
Oh, I have some idea because,
like watching stuff, you know, and thinking about, wait, I was this and I should be, I was this old. Oh my God. I am really an old fart.
The first time that I can actually remember like thinking, oh, Elton John, and I was playing a song over and over again, was I had a 8-track, yes, 8-track, tape that I had gotten. It was a collection of songs that were, I can't remember what it was called, but it was like Galactic Hits or something. And it was all about like pop songs or rock songs that were, you know, about space or that kind of thing. And I know it had Space Oddity on it. And I was aware of Space Oddity. I was aware of David Bowie. I was already a David Bowie fan. It also had Rocket Man on it. And I remember listening to that over and over and over again, that collection. And I really liked Rocket Man. As a matter of fact, I would put it almost as high up as I would Space Oddity as a really cool track on the album. They were the best two tracks on that album. As a matter of fact, I can't even remember what a lot of the other songs were. Rocket Man. It's interesting that they're making a movie, or they made a movie and they called it Rocket Man, because like that's the song more than any of the others that I associate with him. So, and later on, I've never bought a Elton John album. And it's not because I haven't liked his music. It's just because I never felt the need to, because his music was always around. Like I didn't feel like the need to go out and buy something, because if you just turn on the radio or the TV or a movie or whatever, there's an Elton John song. I do remember, you know, the days when I was making tapes or whatever and recording stuff off the radio. I do remember getting a couple tracks off the 80s stuff. I liked, I was a big fan of I'm Still Standing. And I think, Sad Songs, is that one? Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And
which they made it to a wonderful commercial.
Yes.
And I guess that's why they call it blues. So those songs I liked a lot. And I think I kind of might have dropped off. I think he kind of dropped off a little bit in the 90s or whatever. And then he switched up to doing, I think in the 90s, he's most famous for doing Lion King. Which was an amazing feat in and of itself. I want to talk about the early music or some of the hits. Or did you guys get, like I said, I didn't buy any albums. Michelle, I know that you did. Mm-hmm. Do you have a particular one that was a favorite of yours?
Yellow Brick Road.
Yeah?
Yep.
Why that one?
It's an absolute masterpiece. It's one of the best albums of the last century, I would say. I remember being a kid and wanting it so bad and getting it for Christmas. It had the hits. It had Benny and the Jets, which was very big at school. So that's what I wanted it for as a kid. And then growing older, it was like, this is really just a brilliant piece of music that'll last for all time.
Bambi, any particular albums that you have or songs?
I don't actually own any Elton John albums as a whole, sadly, but I often listen to Don't Let the Sun Go Down on Me, with the song he did with George Michael, because I like George Michael so much.
No, but, absolutely.
I like the song Rocket Man because I'm also a space fan.
Yes, you are. Yes.
I guess a side note, Elton John sticks out because of the song Crocodile Rock, because I've been teaching kids how to play the intro piano. And I'm like, oh yeah, it's kind of a genius piano lick the way he wrote it. It's actually a really good tool in teaching kids the beginning of how to play keyboards. And that's, and like, oh, that was smart of him. I wonder if he was just messing around practicing and came up with that. So anyway,
that song I will never forget. That song was, I do remember that song, particularly from the Muppets, his appearance on the Muppets. They did a version of Crocodile Rock, which has stuck with me.
Oh yeah. When they were up in the dressing room and then the Muppets were singing it and it was like really bad. And Elton was like, it is really bad, isn't it? Here, let me try this for way of doing it. And then he started into Crocodile Rock. It was awesome.
Ricky, what about you?
Well, there's so many of his songs that stand out for different reasons. It's hard to pick just one. But if I had to pick just one, I would say probably Sleeping with the Past, which was off of the album Sleeping with the Past in 89. I think the more famous song off of that album was Club at the End of the Street, if you remember that one.
Okay.
But
I must admit, you are totally getting my best friend because I'm like, I don't know that song at all, I don't think.
Since I've heard it.
Sleeping with the Past, I don't even know if it was a radio hit, but it was one that I used to listen to a lot. It was one of those songs that, you know, reminds you of a certain time in your life, that kind of thing.
Sure.
But there's so many of his songs stand out for different reasons because he has been around for so long. You know, so many songs I was familiar with before I knew they were Elton John songs. And then once I started understanding who he was, from that point on, each time I'd hear a new song and know that it was Elton John, it would kind of stick for that time in my life. So, and you know, he just keeps putting out music. He's one of those rare artists who's had legitimately good songs over numerous decades. So many people, I feel like they keep having hits, but only because of who they are. But Elton John keeps having hits because the songs are good.
Yeah. And I think a lot, I mean, this is as good a time as any to bring Bernie Taupin into it because, you know, as good as Elton is, I don't know where he would be if it wasn't for Bernie Taupin, who has
agreed, definitely
his writing partner, providing the lyrics like since the beginning, right?
No, very much so. Yeah. I think.
And up till now, like they still are writing songs together. And that's pretty amazing. I mean, I know there's been points where they've been apart, but the fact that, you know, two guys have been creatively involved for that long and produced so much amazing material, I think is unparalleled.
Well, it's kind of interesting too, because if you put it this way, you know, they took over where Lennon and McCartney left off. They were the next great song duo. And they, you know, Lennon and McCartney only did, 10 years?
Yeah.
And I mean, Bernie and Elton, they're going almost on 50.
Right. Yes. And, I mean, what a an interesting couple of songwriters they are when one of them gets 9% of the fame, you know, maybe more, maybe 99% of the fame.
But Bernie didn't want to be in front. He threw Elton in front.
Yeah, if Bernie would just wear more outrageous costumes.
Yeah.
But I'm just saying, with most songwriting duos, they're both pretty close to equally famous. But with those two, regardless of what Bernie wanted, it's just interesting to me that Elton John was definitely the face, even though both of them contributed so much to the songwriting.
Yeah. Well, I don't know. I mean, did Bernie actually ever appear? Like, did he play? Did he appear on stage? Or was he just mainly a guy?
He has at least one solo album.
Really?
Yes.
That he sings and performs himself? Mm-hmm. Wow. I had no idea.
Well, I didn't know that.
That's how obscure he is. Yeah. That just proves your point, Ricky.
Yeah, I was like, wait.
Mike, what about you? Any particular albums that that stand out for you?
Oh, wow. Goodbye Yellow Brick Road, Captain Fantastic, Mad Men Across the Water, Honky Chateau, you know, a lot of his earlier stuff. You know, looking even to Caribou, you know, it's just, it's interesting when you look at his work and just, you know, most of the songs on those albums are hits, and it might not be like stuff that gets played on the radio all the time, but like his first few albums, you know, probably every song on them, or you've heard them at one point or another, which is pretty awesome. And, you know, Elton, you know, like I said, Elton's always been around for me, and he is, you know, like was always a mainstay, and, you know, he was always fun. He was always uplifting, even his more serious stuff, you know, and it's just like Funeral for a Friend or something. It was just awesome. And Candle in the Wind and, you know, his more, you know, serious stuff. It's just, it is awesome. And, you know, I remember many nights singing, you know, being drunk and singing Daniel, My Brother, you know, stuff like that, you know, and just a lot of people in bars just, you know, singing Elton John songs, and we were straight. It was pretty awesome.
Ricky and Bambi, I need to ask you, bring in your musicianship here, your musical knowledge. Are there particular songs that you either have included or played, written or performed at one point by Elton John that stand out for you as being either challenging or fun? Or
well, the main one, and Bambi just mentioned this earlier, the main one's Crocodile Rock. And it's one that we taught one of the groups of kids to perform at the school where we teach, because it's simple enough musically that we could simplify it for these kids who are 12 and under to play. And it's got a classic 1950s, 1960s rock feel that it makes it sound timeless. Bambi, would you like to add anything to that?
Yeah, I guess I actually, in addition to that, I had somebody ask me to pick something off of Yellow Brick Road to teach them to play on guitar. And they had just learned how to play guitar that month and wanted to learn a song to play for their grandmother's birthday. And I had a little trouble with it, but I did simplify Candle in the Wind down to where she was able to play it. And I thought that was neat. That was actually a fun little thing to do.
It's an interesting question, or an interesting point, really, that so Elton's pretty much known as being a pianist, right? And then most of his songs are, you know, that's the highlight. You don't think of too many of his songs being like a rockin' guitar heavy tune. So when you guys are playing them, I would imagine that most of the time you are having to rearrange them in a way.
Yes. Yeah.
That's not always the case. When we were teaching Crocodile Rock to the kids, we had two keyboardists.
Yeah.
So we actually had one student play
the organ part.
Yeah. And then another student play the other part. So it was a complicated enough part that we gave his single part to two students.
Do you find a lot of like his music is overly, or is it one of those cases where it's it seems simple but it's actually complex?
No, I would say I don't want to say it's the opposite, where it sounds more complicated than it is, but there are a lot of really great songs that can be simplified down to something that's easier to play and still sounds so much like the original song that everybody recognizes it right away. So even though Elton John is a great piano player and it may not be easy to teach someone how to play the song the way he plays it, many of his songs can be simplified so that even somebody who hasn't been playing very long can still play a version of his song that sounds kind of like his song, just sort of a
simplified
version.
You can still teach them a part where people will recognize what they're trying to play, and it still works. You don't have to play it just like he does for it to be recognizable.
Right.
And that's actually really, that's good songwriting. If you can simplify a part and somebody can still recognize it, that's a really strong song.
Actually, I had somebody tell me many, many years ago when I was pretty early on in music that, and I think they were telling me because I was writing songs that were too complicated, but they said any great song can be broken down to just a guitar and a vocalist singing it. If you're talking about pop music, if you're talking about pop and rock and things like that, if you're writing an orchestra piece, it's a different set of rules. But if you're writing a song to get played on the radio so people will sing along with it, their point was it should be able to be simplified enough so that an acoustic guitar player can play and sing it and everybody would still enjoy the song. So Elton John has managed to write song after song after song that can be simplified down to an acoustic guitar and vocals and still be a great song.
Yeah, people will still know what you're doing.
One of the things that I just recently learned was that even from a very, I knew he was a great musician, but I did not know that even from an early age, he was a child prodigy. He could basically hear a tune and play it instantly. Like he just had that knack. Have you guys ever encountered anybody with that kind of skill?
To varying degrees, definitely. I mean, at a young age, it's much, much more impressive. The longer that you play, obviously, the better you get at doing things like that. And so people we know who have been playing longer are a lot better at that. I mean, Bambi and I have been playing long enough that we can do that to some extent. And on a regular basis, do it live in front of an audience.
Which isn't always the best idea, but...
Yeah, it's often a bad idea, but it could be a lot of fun when we completely destroy your favorite song on stage.
Oh, yeah.
Well, I have seen it when you've asked for requests and somebody comes up with something that you're not familiar with, yet you muscle through.
Yes. And when I'm not familiar with it at all, I pretty much just write a song on the spot that uses whatever the title of their song is somewhere in the lyrics.
In fact, it's even more entertaining.
But, and we've done that a lot. But yes, it's very impressive that somebody who's young and untrained can hear a song and pick it out and play it by ear right away. And the more accurately that somebody can play a song, also the more impressive. We've played with several guitar players who, through a combination of experience and just natural talent, have been able to pretty much play any song that they've heard, even if they haven't heard it recently, any song they're familiar with, without much advance notice. And, as we just mentioned, it's something that we do a lot on stage. So having a guy like that on stage with you is a huge asset when you constantly throw songs at them. I'm kind of famous in our band with our various guitar players for saying, hey, can you play such and such a song? And they'll say, I can probably fake my way through it. And my response is, good, I'll follow you.
And I think it's also, you know, not only could he hear something and then play it pretty accurately, but then for him to just be able to take lyrics, like a poem that, you know, certainly in the early days that Bernie would write and just come up with musical arrangements for it that are so, you know, successful is a difference. I mean, that's one thing to be able to ape something that you hear, but a totally other, different skill set to be able to take something and just imagine it in your head and then kind of like hear it while you're reading something. And then, because Michelle, you have a story about where he appeared and he was able to like just write a song like right on air, right?
Yeah, I can't remember if it was the Graham Norton show, and this may be on YouTube. Guy in the audience said, can you write a song based on the instruction manual for my, it was like a charcoal grill or a food processor, something you cook with. And they gave it to Elton, and he sat down at the piano and looked at it and wrote a song about, from the, using the manual as the lyrics, wrote a song.
Wow.
And it instantly went to number one, right?
Of course it did. Of course. Especially in the UK.
The grill went to number one.
Only in the UK.
Haven't you heard of the George Foreman grill? No,
all right. So let's talk about, since we're talking about the man performing, let's talk about seeing him live. I've never had the honor of seeing him in person, but I know you have, Michelle. Tell us what that was like. When did you see him?
I saw him. Oh my goodness. I think it was, I want to say 1990. I had wanted to see him for so many years. And I think, I can't remember a whole lot about it. I remember being just amazed. I remember it raining.
It was outside?
It was Lakewood. Yeah.
Oh, okay. Gotcha.
Yeah, but it's been so many years that I can't remember specifically.
Do you remember what he was wearing?
I don't, which is just weird.
is he a guy, maybe you don't know this, but is he a guy that changes outfits throughout the like the night? Or does he just come out with one thing and pretty much sticks with it?
I think he does.
He changes. He's like Cher.
Gotcha. He's like Cher, right? Yeah. Like, and you know, because you would think stage presence wise, I mean, obviously the outfits help, but if it's just a guy behind a piano, it can be kind of not as exciting stage wise, right?
No, Elton, oh yeah.
Elton, a piano, though?
Elton has tons of energy, and Elton can communicate with the crowd. I mean, even if he didn't have the costumes.
Well, I remember there was a period after his heart attack that he actually toned it down, and he started just coming wearing a top hat and like almost like normal clothes for Elton John, you know,
type thing. Which is weird because it's like, why would that? But I guess he didn't want to look in the mirror and give himself another heart attack.
No. And so, but yeah, they called it the reinvented Elton John. That's why, like, when the video for I'm Still Standing, he was more muted, his costumes and stuff, his clothes.
Right.
And he was going through that era.
Now, Mike, have you ever seen him play?
Twice.
Okay. Tell us about that.
Well, I saw him first, like, on concert, like on HBO. He was doing one from Philadelphia. But I saw him once at the Capitol Center in Washington, D.C. And it was awesome. He literally played for almost like 2.5 to 3 hours and blew the house down. He didn't take any breaks. He just went from song to song to song.
Now, when was this?
This had to be 1985, 86.
Okay, so he was high on coke. So
oh, of course he was. He was high on coke until the early 90s, dude. But so yeah.
That's how he could play for 4 hours straight.
Mm-hmm. And
the
then
real
I saw
reason him. That he did all those costume changes.
And then I saw him probably in Seattle. I saw him at Key Arena and with the X Monster, and he basically was pretty much, you know, just as good, but it wasn't as high energy as it was the first one because, you know, it was almost 20 years difference. So, but it was pretty awesome.
Well, I know that now he's, and Ricky and Bammy, have you seen him at all?
No,
I
wish I had.
Yeah, he's because my understanding is he's now on his retirement tour.
Yeah.
I think he's finishing that up. I think he's still scheduled to play a couple more dates in Atlanta.
It's like the end of the Yellow Brick Road or tour or something like that. Right. But it's like his vocal range is shot. his voice, yeah. You know, he can't hit the notes and everything. Like you could look it on YouTube. He's been playing and singing with the kid who's playing Elton John in the movie. And he, you know, he doesn't have anywhere the vocal range that he used to have, but he's
72.
Yeah. That's what I was about to say. He is 72 years old, but he could still belt a tune.
Sure. Sure. And and he is retiring. So this is it. I mean, this mm-hmm. is, you know, I mean, he might pop up and occasionally for appearances here and there, but this is pretty much, it for a tour. Unfortunately now, if you want to see him, you'd have to, you know, put a second mortgage on the house.
Yeah.
Oh God. Yes.
Because those tickets are not cheap.
They were starting at $275.
Yeah. Crazy.
Yeah.
Thank you. The Eagles.
Yeah. Yeah. That's whose fault it is.
Well, you know, Elton John owes his life to a 14-year-old kid. You know about that, right?
I don't. What?
About Ryan White.
Oh, Ryan White. I do remember that. I do remember something about that. Yes.
Yeah. Ryan White was a 14-year-old kid in Indiana. He contracted AIDS following a blood transfusion. And Elton took a very big interest in that and seeing how much full of life this kid, who had pretty much at the time had a death sentence, you know, because there wasn't the, you know, medications and stuff like there is today to help fight it, and how brave he was. That's what caused Elton to go sober.
Wow.
Oh, wow.
And that's why, you know, spoiler from the movie, they say at the end of it, he's been sober for 28 years. That's what caused Elton to go sober and everything. Mm. And to this day, Elton John is one of the largest donors to the HIV AIDS Research Fund. And it's pretty darn amazing what all the charities he gives to.
Wow.
Yes. Yeah. He's a, you know, I mean, I look, I'm not a big fan of that. That's What Friends Are For song, but, you know, I can't not. And especially around that time, that was, for him to be so involved with that and be a front man for that kind of thing. Mm-hmm. You know, was a pretty massive undertaking for him, and something that he'll definitely be remembered for as much of his music, really. Well, cool. Well, we're gonna have to wind down our talk about Elton John, so we will end with a recommendation from each one of us on something that you should listen to, see, watch, whatever. That in regards to our spotlighted performer, Sir Elton John. See, I've been not using his moniker. So now, like, what is that? are the Royal Police going to come and arrest me because I haven't been calling him Sir Elton John this entire time? Sir Elton Hercules John is his. Did he actually change his name to that? Is that?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Hercules, I love that. So, Michelle, what's one thing that you would suggest that people check out from Elton John? Sir Elton John.
Oh, goodness. So much good stuff. If to you, Elton John is The Lion King and the 90s and later, I would go back. I would go back to Tumbleweed Connection, which is from Bernie's Wild West period. Come Down in Time, Country Comfort, which is later covered by Rod Stewart. And mid-70s, I would check out Captain Fantastic, which was...
Great CD.
It's absolutely brilliant. It was his and Bernie's first foray into their biography, presenting their story to the world in song form. And of course, Yellow Brick Road.
Oh, of course, Yellow Brick Road. Okay. All right, Bambi?
Well, considering I really only know the hits, I don't own any of the albums, I feel bad, so I'm going to just point out Don't Let the Sun Go Down on Me with George Michael, just because I think their voices are absolutely amazing together. Yes, I know that Elton John released it, you know, earlier, but I like the version with George Michael. Just wow. Yeah. The live version too. It's the live version that I like so much.
That is such a great song for George's voice. It really was.
Yeah.
Now was that played at Freddie's memorial or is that something different?
That was something different. George okay. Michael did.
He did some.
Somebody Loved.
Some. That's right.
He oh, did yeah,
somebody.
Which was also a great song.
George Ooh. Michael was brilliant.
Yes, he was.
Yes.
One of the most underrated vocalists of all time.
Well, when his biopic comes out, we will spotlight him.
Yes, okay.
All right, Ricky, what about you?
I guess I'm going to go with Sleeping with the Past. Just because it's an album that I never hear anybody mention, even though it had a couple of hits on there and several really solid songs that I don't think ever got radio play. So Sleeping with the Past.
Well, I'm very curious about that one too, now that you mention it, because I'm like, I'm not aware of that at all. And maybe it's something that I'll hear and I'll be like,
had Healing Hands and it had Club at the End of the Street, and those are probably the two you'd know.
I do remember the Club at the End of the Street, yes.
Yeah.
But I did forget about it until you just mentioned it. Now it'll probably be in my head for a week. Mike, what about you?
I'm gonna have to pretty much echo what Michelle had said. She has good taste, what can you say? Goodbye Yellow Brick Road, Captain Fantastic, Mad Men Across the Water. Anything, I would always recommend anything from his 70s era. That's my favorite era of Elton John. And after that, I thought he got too popcorny and, you know, bubblegummy. So I didn't really listen to many of the albums themselves after that point. But, you know, it's always entertaining. Anytime you can get the chance to see a video of his live concerts. But, you know, if you really want to have fun with Elton John, see him on The Muppet Show.
Yes, yeah. Absolutely. Yeah.
Yes. And by the way, it was Benny and the Jets. They were singing up in the dressing room.
Yeah, because I kind of remember Crocodile Rock was on the stage and it actually had Muppet crocodiles. So,
exactly. And Kermit told.
How would you not do that one? Right, exactly.
Exactly. And they also did Goodbye Yellow Brick Road on that episode, too.
Ah, man, I'd forgotten about that. I have to dig that one out. I think I have the Muppets. I think I have that one on disc. So, mm-hmm. Not a lot left for me to push, except for I'm going to go in slightly different direction and actually mention a cover that he did. He didn't do a lot of covers, but man, when he did, and this is a song that was iconic for a particular band, but he appears in the movie Tommy, and he does a version of Pinball Wizard, which is just phenomenal and actually became a huge hit. I think it might have even been bigger than the Who's hit.
It was.
With it. So, and you don't get that very often. I think the only other time I can think about something like that happening was, we mentioned Aerosmith earlier this year, but with their cover of Come Together off the Sgt. Pepper's album. Elton John's doing a kick-ass version. It might be, to me, the most rocking song. Like, that's as rock as he gets. Like, as like hard rock as he gets. Mm-hmm. Which
and
means
it was awesome, though, because if you get a chance to see his character in the movie, Tommy.
Yes. Yeah, it's so great. He's a highlight. That movie is weird. And we could talk about that movie some other time, but it's a very strange movie. But his appearance in it is worth checking out.
Somebody on the Dragon Con Facebook page actually put a picture of Elton in that costume and says, this is what I want to go as to Dragon Con. Help me do it.
That's awesome. Well, very cool. Speaking of Elton and movies, we are getting ready to do a full review of the new movie, Rocket Man, which features the life of Sir Elton Hercules John. So, but before we do that, Ricky and Bambi, thanks so much for joining us.
Yeah, thank you for having us. Yeah.
Anything you want to shout out real quick before we let you guys go?
Meow.
That pretty much sums it up.
Well, very cool. Well, we will look forward to checking you guys out, having you join us again for our next musical spotlight, which I believe is in a couple months. And we will be talking about the 50th anniversary of Woodstock.
Woohoo!
Was Elton John at Woodstock?
No, Elton John was not at Woodstock.
Well, you know, it seems like everybody was there. So forgive me.
So, I wasn't.
Mike was.
I was.
Well, there was one person here who was, so that's going to be fun to talk about. So thank you guys so much.
Let's take a quick break, and we'll be back in a moment.
Everyone these days could use a little support, and your friends at the ESO Network are no different. With the ESO Network Patreon, the cool thing is when you help support us, it's you who will benefit. With four tiers starting for as little as 25 cents a week, you can listen to some of your favorite network podcasts early, hear exclusive content, maybe get some ESO swag, or even possibly take a shot at the geek seat. All you need to do is sign up at patreon.com/ESO Network.
So we're breaking into this little segment here, and we have Bobby Nash. We have some very exciting news. Bobby, you announced a contest last week, if I remember correctly.
Yes, yes. We were giving away a snow prize pack, an ebook version of Snow Falls and the audio version of Snow Series 1, Volume 1. Read by Stuart Goffey, who's been on the show with us here before, and which has the first three novels as audiobooks. And so we ran the contest in last week's episode, and we're here tonight thrilled to announce the winner.
So the big news is, after the millions of people who listen to ESO have entered.
Yes, yes. Congratulations to friend of the station, Mike Seals, who was our big winner of the Snow Prize Pack. So Mike, actually by the time this airs, Mike will already have them. But congratulations. Thank you so much for participating. And thanks to everyone who participated. And it was a lot of fun. I hope you hope Mike enjoys the snow books.
It's only appropriate that somebody named Mike wins it, you know?
I know, right? It's like you have to be named Mike to be on the show or to like the show or to win on the show, or it's really cool.
Well, we just changed the name to Mike Station 1 or something like that.
Earth Station Mike.
Oh, God, my ego's big already. Do we really need... Wow. Well, Bobby, yeah. Thank you so, so much for including us in this contest. And
my pleasure, guys. Well, you know, any excuse to come to the station and hang out is cool. And I wanted to give something back, and some of my fondest memories happened here on the station. So I'm, always thrilled to come back and hang out for a bit.
Oh, dude, you're always welcome on the station. You know that.
Oh, thank you.
It's your home away from home.
Get back in the airlock.
Now get back in the airlock, yes.
JD was just signaling me. He was like, where's Bobby?
It's like, well, you are talking about a musical, so I've got to go somewhere where I can hide.
Oh, exactly. Remember, just put the headphones on. You could ignore it.
Exactly. But yes, but once again, thanks. Thanks again to everyone who participated, and congratulations to Mike. I do want to say real quick that if anyone's if you didn't win, or if you want to learn more about these books, www.ben-books.com. There's a whole page devoted to the snow books.
Excellent. We'll have a link to it up on our show notes on top of it. Thank you, sir.
Thank you.
Feeling into...
I could hear the whole tune in my head. It was all there. I could see all the notes, and I just had to get it out.
It's a little bit funny, this feeling inside.
What did you say your name was again?
My name is...
Reggie!
Reginald Dwight.
Reginald? That's my granddad's name.
So that is a fat boy from nowhere. Get to be a soul man.
Gotta kill the person you were born to be in order to become the person you want to be.
I'm thinking of changing my name to Elton.
But that's my name.
Yeah, I know.
You can be the best-selling artist in America if you desire.
I was trying to do something bold.
Why are you still something flashy?
Can you even play the piano in those?
Let them know who you are.
just don't kill yourself with drugs.
So how does it feel to be a star?
It's never gonna last.
Let's just enjoy it while we can.
First sleeping arrangements, kiddo. All of this is gone.
I just hope you realize you're choosing a life of being alone forever.
Don't you want to just sing without this ridiculous paraphernalia?
People don't pay to see Reg Dwight. They pay to see Elton John.
Sorry. Right now.
Care how much pressure I'm under.
Not really. I'll still be collecting my 20% long after you've killed yourself.
Maybe I should have tried to be more ordinary.
You were never ordinary.
Little boy, you were. Look at you now.
Hey, everyone. Welcome back to Earth Station One. Now it's time for the movie review, and we are looking all about Rocket Man.
Yeah, we just talked about the musician, the man. So now let's talk about the movie. And yes, Ricky and Bambi are no longer here on the station, but our movie crew is here. We've got with us Ashley Pauls.
Hello.
Sorry, I didn't mean to say that as a question.
Yeah, but you want to do you want to redo that?
Okay.
Ashley Pauls?
I think I beamed up to the station correctly. Like, I think it's still me.
Is it half of her or no?
It's my no evil clone that is going to be doing the review tonight.
That would explain the goatee.
Yeah.
And you just heard Alex Autry, of course.
Howdy.
And Michelle is still here, so let's get to it. We will talk all about the movie. And Alex, I have to ask, I mean, this movie, even though it's been a couple weeks now, very soft opening. I'm very surprised, actually, with the amount of money and the hit that Bohemian Rhapsody turned out to be. This following suit, it just really surprises me how little it's doing.
I think it's safe to say that this movie was released in the summer as counter-programming. This was supposed to be the alternative for the adults to go see while the kids are hanging out in Godzilla and Aladdin and that sort of thing. Its domestic box office over a 2-week period is $50 million.
To put it in perspective, that's what Bohemian Rhapsody got the first weekend.
Right. International box office for Rocket Man is $51 million. This movie is not tracking well.
Not at all. Now, what do you guys think? Do you think it's because of the subject matter? Do you think Elton's not as popular with folks as Queen? Do you think it's because it's an R rating? Or is there just too much competition and this movie's being drowned out? Ashley, what do you think?
I think that the R rating could have a slight effect versus like with the, I believe Bohemian Rhapsody was PG-13. So families might go to it versus this one, but we've seen R rated movies like Logan and Deadpool do really well in this type of time period. So I honestly have to say, I think it's competition. You know, the movies have been coming fast and furious, no pun intended there, so far this summer. And
that's later this summer.
Yeah, right.
Jumping a little bit ahead of myself. You know how we work here on the station.
A little ahead of myself there. But I've been going to see a movie just about every weekend. But I know that's something that not everybody is able to do. So I think there's just a little too much going out on right now, which I think is a shame. If they'd held this movie closer to fall, I think that it would have done a lot better. But I guess we can hope at least that some people will maybe pick it up when it comes out on DVD or streaming services. But it is a shame to see it not performing so well, especially when Bohemian Rhapsody found so much traction.
Michelle, what about you? Do you have any idea why it might not be as popular?
I think it's a little of all of the above that you mentioned. I think that some people, unfortunately, when they catch wind that there is, I'll call it semi-graphic gay sex content, they'll decide that's not for them. Although there is no nudity in this film, it's actually very tame. It's slightly more graphic than Bohemian Rhapsody, but still very tame. And some people, I mean, word of mouth gets out, and it's a musical. It's presented as a musical with musical numbers in the story, and some people just hate that. A guy that I work with who's a big movie fan and a big Elton fan, he saw it the week before I did, and he was just like, I don't know. Yeah. I was really surprised at his reaction.
We just actually talked to the award-winning Bobby Nash, who's infamous for hating musicals as well. So yeah, you're right. That might have something to do with it. Alex, what do you think?
While I agree with Ashley that there is a lot of competition, and the fact is that all of these movies are coming at us very Hobbs and Shaw. I that's a deep cut.
That's
anyway,
nice.
I think
bravo, sir.
Thank you. I think in the long run, what you've got is Bohemian Rhapsody played the homosexual storyline safe. And Rocket Man was very upfront and very in your face in a good way. And did not play. And it's not going to play well in your family theaters. This movie, I'll be honest. I've seen the movie twice. It's the only movie this summer I have seen twice.
Wow.
And of that, I can honestly say that either myself or the person that I went with, one, a friend of the station, Lacey, and two, my wife, probably the youngest ones in the theater. And
wow,
that
really?
That is not the demographic that the box office goes after.
Not in the summer.
No.
You're right.
No, not at all. No.
And yeah, you're right. And I think, you know, now that I think about it, I think Michelle and I were, you know, probably, I mean, we weren't the youngest, but there was not that many young people when we saw it either.
Right. Elton's music is timeless, but a lot of the people only see him, his music now, as ending at Lion King. Like, there's nothing after Lion King. This movie stops at I'm Still Standing.
Which is, yeah, these, which is 1983.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So yeah.
It is interesting that this is there are two movies coming out within like a month of each other where, you know, Elton John's getting paid for music.
Mm-hmm. So. Yeah. Yeah. So I think that has a lot to do with it.
Yeah.
Freddie Mercury always constantly remains a musical icon. Elton John is in a wheelhouse for a lot of people and not for others.
Do you know, I actually heard someone at work say that one of the reasons why they were kind of like, well, yeah, I mean, it's cool, but I don't know why. I don't understand why they're making this movie. It's not like he's dead.
No, but they don't need to. And that's like, that's the one. That's the thing with this movie is and I was talking to some friends about it, is basically this movie, you know, Bohemian Rhapsody was a pure biop movie.
Yeah.
You know, it was and everything. This was more of a jukebox musical. And jukebox musicals don't do that well over the summer. That's just a fact. And I walked out of that movie and I was like, we've got to go see this again. And we went to see it the next day. And I'm planning on probably seeing it again next weekend. That's how much I enjoyed it.
Well, let's get right into the movie then and what we thought. I think a lot of people are probably, our listeners are probably already kind of keen to know what we thought, but Ashley, what did you think overall of it?
Yeah. So the interesting thing about this movie is that, well, I would have kind of what I would label a casual familiarity with Elton John's music. I haven't listened to his entire catalog, but I do enjoy his music. And every time I'm scanning through the radio, if one of his songs comes on more often than not, I'll stop and listen to it and be like, oh, I really like that music. And I didn't know a lot about his life story either. What really sold me was the preview, actually. I saw it several times before going to see other movies. I thought, this just looks really fun and unique. So that's actually what motivated me to go see the movie. And I actually really liked that it was a musical. I know that choice may or may not work for some viewers, and that's totally cool. But I really liked that they decided to do it as a musical instead of a standard biographical movie, because I think that really works with Elton John's personality and his stage persona and who he is. So I thought that it really fit that the characters would just break into song. And I'm actually curious to see if this movie would someday maybe even make its way to Broadway, because I could see it doing really well as a stage show too. So the music,
exactly.
Yeah, I would really like to see a live version of this. So that could maybe be an opportunity too. Maybe it doesn't do as well in theaters, but it could find new life in another format. So I hope that
this actually reminds me of what, you know, you were just saying about a Broadway play. Cause I remember they put out the summer a couple summers ago. It was the movie version of, what was it? Jersey Boys.
Yes.
Same thing.
Yeah.
And so it was almost the same thing, but going the opposite direction, going from the movie to the stage. And I think,
yeah, I would,
this is a good fit for it.
I would love to see that. So anybody out there who's listening that has any power in Broadway, we would like to see the stage version of this music, of this movie.
Yes. And give us credit, please.
Yes. Yeah. Just you know, especially a little tiny print in the program. I'll be good. Maybe a free ticket. That's all I'm asking.
Idea by Ashley Paul.
There you go. Michelle, what about you? What was your, because I know your expectations were pretty big for this. I mean, I don't know if Elton's, yeah, he might be on the level of like as Freddie for you, because you there's albums of his that are your top albums of all time.
Oh,
right?
Yes. Oh, yes.
I mean, we just talked about it. So I know that you're, you know, more than anybody else here, I think that you're like the biggest Elton John fan. So
I'm the oldest one on this podcast. I like musicals. I've loved Elton for years. I too, the trailers for this just stopped me in my tracks. I was like, I am seeing this. And this movie for me lived up to those trailers and beyond. Magical is kind of a movie marketing word, but for me, it really was magical. I would call it a better film than Bohemian Rhapsody.
Agreed.
I am really sorry that Taron Egerton's performance is probably not going to get the accolades it really deserves, because it is a brilliant performance.
Yeah, especially when not only does he capture the look and sort of style of Elton, but I mean, the man sings. Mm-hmm. And like, he sings really well, like very much like, I mean, I know he's got help vocally from coaches and from electronics and whatnot, but still, I mean, there were a lot of times where I was like, I don't, I think that's Elton John. No, it's not. Oh, okay.
No, Elton didn't sing once other in this movie.
Yeah. I think he's only on the end. Yeah. I was going to say he's in the credit, like that news. Yeah. There's a new song that shows up at the credits, I think. So
yeah, that's, I was just going to say, that's another reason why I'm kind of sad they didn't save it for October, November. Cause I can't really see it maintaining or picking up Oscar buzz at that time, just because it's come out in the summertime. So it's a shame that, like you said, he may not get recognition just because it's not close to that kind of narrow Oscar window.
And unfortunately, I mean, as good as Taron is, and we could argue that he's better in some ways because he can sing, there's no way that the Academy would vote for another like actor playing a musician like 2 years
ago. That's true.
They just wouldn't do it. They just wouldn't do it. Like, so he would be doomed from the beginning anyway. So, Alex, what about you? What did you think?
I loved the whole thing. There's a, just to show my age, the overall film feels like the last sequence of the movie, All That Jazz. Which is this incredible over-the-top kind of fantasy moment where the director of the movie actually has on film his own funeral. It's very, very strange, but it's a movie about Bob Fosse, and it was directed by Bob Fosse. So, Mr. Egerton is absolutely phenomenal. Simply perfect. And considering that this is not the first time that Mr. Egerton has performed an Elton John song, specifically I'm Still Standing, in a movie, kind of shows that he definitely has the chops. I think.
Wow.
Yeah, there's some, like multi-layered deep cuts and puns.
Thank you. And then I'll do something stupid, like say Joss Whedon did Felicity. Anyway.
2 weeks in a row.
2 weeks in a row. The thing is, though, is that there's no reason why he won't get a nomination for this, because I think his performance is that good. And by releasing it during the summer, it will be in the hands of everybody in the Academy when it is on video and DVD and Blu-ray and digital download by November.
Yeah, that's a good call. That's a good call. And it's up to the studio. If they push it,
yeah.
Mm-hmm.
If they're behind it, you know, then I think he's got a chance.
And with a $50 million gross, there's a real chance of calling this an indie surprise, despite the fact that it's actually a big budget film. But there are times when these small movies that nobody actively goes to see winds up raking in all the awards. So it's possible that we'll see something big come out of this. Simply costume design.
Yes.
Oh God, yes.
On multiple levels, because you not only have his crazy costumes, which are almost spot on from and in fact, and one of the
I love the fact that during the credits they show you pictures just to be like, okay, we didn't really make this up. This is what he actually wore. Yes.
And how freaking weird was it that little boy who plays him looked exactly like him?
Yes, they were both the younger actors were.
Yeah, the 10-year-old version of Elton has an absolute future ahead of him, and I hope he continues acting, and I hope that he gets really, really good roles because he's quite talented. But I think overall, I like watching this film. And thinking about it from the perspective that this is how Elton John would tell his story, the music makes so much sense. The story makes so much sense because Elton absolutely sees himself in this movie as the victim consistently.
Oh, of course.
And his music targets those people who are looking for something. That performance of I Need Love or I Want Love, the one where it's the family all singing at the beginning of the movie.
Yes.
Yep.
That was heartbreaking.
So powerful.
Yes.
Such an amazing sequence. And it's all rolling off because as each one of them singing, the song is the same. But every last one of them have a different meaning. And I just thought that was amazing. I think
but they're all suffering from the same thing.
Yeah. Yeah.
In really different ways.
Yeah. It's yeah,
absolutely. No, good point. Mike, what about you overall?
Oh, overall, I love this movie. It kind of sucked, though, going with somebody who is a total Elton John head and was like, wait a minute, that movie didn't come out till 3 years later. Or this song was, you know, like, wait a minute, you know, Elton didn't go into, you know, the whole thing with going into therapy and going into rehab. And it was just, it was fun though, you know, blocking that person out and just enjoying the movie. And that's what was great about it.
I think the because it's a fantasy musical, it has a lot more leeway to play around with a lot of that stuff than Bohemian Rhapsody did. Mm-hmm. I mean, Bohemian Rhapsody is basically saying like, this is how things happen. Whereas Rocketman is like, this is kind of just the feeling of stuff.
Didn't you like this song? Here's this song. there was a moment and Lacey, I'm giving Lacey all the credit in the world for pointing this out. Because I was saying that one of the songs I really enjoyed, and she goes, was it that moment where the piano spins around and we get to see nothing but iconic costumes because they had to find a way to put those in?
Exactly. That was just awesome.
Yeah.
And especially to doing, you know, when they did, you know, Pinball Wizard to it, it was awesome. And I remember seeing video of that Dodger Stadium concert that he did.
Yeah.
And that was a true event, that he did try to commit suicide. And 3 days later, he was up on at Dodger Stadium.
Wow.
And, you know, literally that was the closest to reality right there. You know, just how much he was working and everything.
Yeah, I think this is a good example of a movie that's not necessarily 100% spot on historically accurate, but it felt authentic, if that makes sense. Like, even if some of the historical details were changed, it felt authentic to his experience. And you could feel his struggle and feel his pain. And the music really helped sell that, even if, of course, it didn't happen exactly as the movie presented it to us.
Well, exactly. And that was the one of the great things about it. And to tag along with what Ashley said about the Broadway play stuff, mm-hmm. I thought the whole Saturday Night's Okay for Fighting.
Yeah.
You know, that whole scene going from the little kid up, and then he's, you know, when he's a teenager, like an older teenager and stuff. Mm-hmm. And it was just awesome. That was just a great scene.
The editing for this film will get a nomination. Mm-hmm. Because the cut scenes in the middle of songs in which they progressively age people is so amazingly difficult to do. And they pull it off really well. And the fact is that the Pinball Wizard, which is the spinning piano sequence, mm-hmm. Showcases that so well. One of the things that I've got to talk about, because I loved the way that it started, was the muted tones as we originally go into his story. Young Elton and him in that phenomenal, phenomenal devil outfit, or fallen angel, I guess is what it would be, walking through his hometown in flashback form. All of the colors are muted except Elton and young Elton, or Reggie, I guess would be the better term.
Reggie.
So Reggie and Elton are, and it's for the Bitches Back as the song that's playing. But if you look at all of the tones, like even the brightest blue is more gray. And it's just, it's really wild to just kind of sit there and watch that and just be blown away by the camera work and the editing of this film. It's a gorgeous film.
Yeah. Well, if you notice with that, everything was muted until he became Elton John.
Yeah.
Yeah. And everything. When he was Reggie, it was all muted.
Absolutely. I'm with y'all. This was a great movie in some way. I mean, obviously it's going to be compared to Bohemian Rhapsody just because of the release dates is so close, British gay pop stars, rock stars, it's like, there's a lot of things to compare here. The same director, but this one is, it's more, the fantastical elements, I think definitely fit the man, the musician, the legend, so to speak. The songs are great. The performance by Taron is just top notch. Best I've seen all year. The movie may not be doing well at the box office, and who knows what it's going to get as far as Oscars and whatnot. But you know, it's guaranteed to get one award, and that is it has to be a Guinness World Record for the most pairs of sunglasses shown in a movie. by one person or by multiple people, because there's so many, like every single scene he's wearing a different pair of glasses. Every single scene. It's just like, wow, that's impressive. I mean, and just like the man, like really, that's the one thing that he was known for. So I definitely, it just captured him. And I think in some ways, maybe it's a little bit personally, I'm more of a Queen fan than I am an Elton John fan. I own many Queen albums. I don't own any Elton John albums. But I like the music. I will say that since I saw the movie on Saturday, and since then, I have had multiple earworms in my head, all different Elton John songs, like just pop up out of nowhere. In fact, today I think was the first day, and this was actually just a little while ago, I actually had a song in my head that wasn't an Elton John song. And I was like, whoa, that took a while.
I feel you on that because I went and saw this movie last Saturday, more than a week ago, and I have had Tiny Dancer in my head on a constant loop. So I love the song, but I would really like to get some freedom from it, at least a little variety. So.
Oh, I know. It's funny because for years, whenever you thought of Tiny Dancer, I always thought of Almost Famous.
Mm-hmm.
The bus scene, which is really famous. And now from I'm going to think about him on at the cabin. It was pretty awesome.
That's a heart-wrenching scene too. Cause it shows like his loneliness and his wanting to be with someone, anyone.
To be loved.
To be loved. And yeah, that was such a good scene.
Mm-hmm. Very much so.
Yeah. So how interesting is it? I want to talk about some of the other performances. How interesting is it that, I mean, Taryn, we've already expressed our love for and admiration for. The rest of the cast, I think, is amazing as well. I did find it interesting that, okay, so John Reed is in this movie, is portrayed in this movie, as well as Bohemian Rhapsody. Two different actors, yet both of them are from Game of Thrones.
I know. It was Robb Stark. It was awesome.
It's the Quicksilver kick-ass conundrum.
It was Robb Stark in this movie, and it was Littlefinger in Bohemian Rhapsody. I think he got, like, I mean, in either movie, he's not portrayed very well. Although I think, I don't know, Michelle, you tell me, I think in Bohemian Rhapsody, he's a little bit better than portrayed than in this movie.
I would say in Bohemian Rhapsody, he's neutral to good. He's just kind of the band's advocate.
There was a really funny moment in the theater when sitting next to Michelle when Elton says, "Stop the car," when he's in there with John Reed, it was like, oh, we've seen this scene before. Mm-hmm. Only it wasn't, it was the other way around. Elton got out instead of John. So, but I thought that was interesting. I don't know. Is John Reed still alive? He must he must really hate these movies.
yeah, all the way to the bank.
I would love to know. Yeah.
I don't know. He doesn't get any money for this, does he?
If they're using him as a character. Yeah,
exactly. If they're using his likeness or if they're using his character, very much so. Hmm. Because he could sue them big time for, you know. And the truth, you know, alive, dead, doesn't matter to him. He'll still make his 20%.
Yeah.
Also, have to mention that... Bryce Howard?
Yes, Dallas Bryce Howard.
Yes. I had completely forgotten that she was Ron Howard's kid.
Yeah, they hid her very, very well. Because you watch the movie and you don't see her. She really, really got into that very, very large wig.
I thought it was funny though. I was joking around. I was saying that I wonder if on set she was taking pictures of herself and saying, "Hey, Dad, I'm dressing like you were on Happy Days."
Yeah.
I'm sorry, Ashley. Happy Days was a sitcom.
I did get that reference. I did get that reference.
Wow.
I read an article where she said that when she got the part and she looked at the script, she was at first kind of horrified that she was vilifying his mom. And she was like, I can't believe that this is like they would do this. They would want to do this. And I'm not sure I want to do this. And she said, I better do some research. So she looked online. She talked to a couple people who knew Elton John, et cetera, and was horrified to find out that his mother in real life was actually much worse.
Yeah. Wow. Oh, yes. Wow. Yeah. We talked about that a little bit earlier in the show. And the relationship he had with his parents, and it's a wonder this guy can talk and walk after what his parents did to him.
I know we talked about this a little bit too in the musician part of it earlier in the show, but I thought the movie really impressed me with because I didn't know much about Elton John's youth or his upbringing at all. And I knew he was a musician. I didn't know he was a musical prodigy. I didn't know that if he heard something once, he could just play it. But apparently he has that skill.
Well, I think we all do deep down.
Some show it better than others, though.
No.
Some it's really deep.
Yeah. No. His, I mean, the fact that he did get scholarship, he did, you know, all of that. But again, it was.
Thank goodness for his grandmother.
And there's a bit of wasted talent there, but it kind of shows that, because he had all that talent. And while, you know, fortunately for us, he used it for the powers of rock and roll, he could have been an amazing concert pianist.
Oh, yeah. He could have done anything, really, in music that he wanted to.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Well, I mean, think about it. I mean, we already kind of mentioned that, he's responsible for all the, you know, the hit songs on, you know, Lion King.
Yeah. Well,
and that's completely different than, you know, what he was working with. Now, in mentioning the cast and the characters, I think ultimately this is a love story, bromance between.
Bromance.
It's a bromance. Right? Yeah.
Yeah. Which I thought that was, I don't know much about their real relationship. I know it's had some ups and downs, and they've gotten together, like they've written together, and then they haven't, and they, you know, I think they're okay now. But apparently they've never had an argument, although in the movie it seems like they have a couple.
No, there's never really an argument. It's one person screaming at the other one.
It's a diva having a meltdown. Come on.
It's one person screaming and the other person walking away.
Yeah.
But Jamie Bell as Bernie Taupin.
Yep.
I thought he was fabulous.
Fantastic.
Yeah.
Yeah, I really loved seeing the depth of their friendship, and I would have loved to see even more of the movie of just their creative process working together, and just like how well the lyrics and the tones and the music speak so well together and just convey an emotion. Like, definitely magic happens when these two are working together.
Yeah.
Well, exactly. And he basically was writing poetry and he sent it into the record label, and Elton was there. It was like serendipity.
Oh, yeah.
They just bind together.
Perfect pairing.
Because you would not be able to get anybody to make the music that Elton did. And I don't think you'd been able to get the songs without Bernie. And that's obvious. And they even discussed that in the film. What's funny is that Jamie Bell starred in Billy Elliot, which Elton John actually helped get the stage production going for. But Billy Elliot was written by Rocketman screenwriter Lee Hall.
Oh, interesting.
So it's more, I'm going to write this, you're going to play it, kind of thing. So, now, Jamie Bell, I agree. I think there could have been a lot more done with Jamie, because I don't feel like he was given a whole lot of time to shine. But there's a moment in the beginning where we're starting to see the first of many montages about Elton's success. Elton actually sits there and says, there's no way this is going to be able to last. And
yeah, they both do. They're both like, yeah, let's just be happy now, because.
Right. And Bernie says, then let's enjoy it now.
Yep.
And that's how he plays it for the rest of the film. So.
Yeah. In a way it felt more, I don't want to say realistic, because this movie is not concerned with that so much, but I mean, you know, when their relationship, it was, you know, I mean, Bernie was the guy that was behind the scenes and Elton was the front man. And speaking of that, I'm kind of torn, because the more I think about it, it doesn't make a definitive statement on this, but I kind of felt like the costumes that Elton was wearing, being a front man, were more out of, were done more out of anger and lack of self-confidence than they were about having fun. And that took a little bit of fun out of the costumes for me.
Yeah. He craved attention. He wanted it from his father. He clearly craved that attention. He was told to, you know, go out and get some clothes. And he went out and found the craziest thing that he could find. And I think they show that very well in this film.
Yeah, because he's not just going out there and dressing like, you know, I mean, he's not gender bending as a general rule. Yeah. He's just going out there, like you said, he's finding the most outrageous thing, whether it's a chicken outfit or dressing up like a Queen Victoria or whatever, or dressing up like, you know, a sparkly ball player. Like he's like how far can I take this rather than it? I mean, it's more than just like I'm the center of attention. It's like, no, like this is, I'm just going to go way over the top as I can.
Mm-hmm. Exactly. And it was interesting to see, you know, the evolution of it. And you saw that, especially in the Pinball Wizard montage.
Mm-hmm. Right.
And, you know, you saw him going from the longer hair and, oh my God, they got his hairline really good. In this one.
They actually have him with more hair in the Don't Go Breaking My Heart scene that he actually had in real life. So just a little bit of embellishment there.
I love the girl they had playing Kiki D. It was awesome.
Yeah, she was.
That was a great scene.
Well, I think we're sort of getting to the end. Before we rate it, is there anything, you know, real quick that you didn't like about the movie, Ashley?
Nothing immediately comes to mind. There were a few moments where I thought maybe they pushed the fantasy element just a little too far, that were just a little bit much for me, but those are like really small quibbles. So not even anything I think even worth mentioning. Overall, I really enjoyed it.
Yeah. Michelle, was there anything that as an Elton John fan that you felt that was missing?
Fan of his career, I kind of wish they had given some credit to his band that he had for so long and his producer, but I understand why they couldn't and didn't.
Okay. All right. Fair enough. Alex?
I can't think of anything off the top of my head, especially after seeing it twice in the same day. I can't think of anything right off the top of my head. The fantasy aspect is a little overbearing, but I understand why it's there. So I kind of liked that. I thought it was actually worth it in the long run. I honestly enjoy this film. I think it's going to do, I hope that it does very well in the secondary market because it deserves it.
Yeah. Mike, what about you?
I'm going to follow what Alex said because truthfully, this movie is too good to fail. I hope that, you know, word of mouth would have gotten out there because most everyone who has seen it has enjoyed it. Some people might have not have loved it as much as others, but it was fun. It was enjoyable. And I'm hoping, you know, when home video comes out or downloading, whatever you want to call it, I'm hoping that more and more people will see it and even more buzz will build for this because the acting was great. The story was fun. The fantasy was a little bit too much, but, you know, I want to see how long it took him to do that swimming pool scene. That's all I wanted to know.
Oh, yeah.
That was awesome.
The
kid sequence, at the bottom.
Yeah, that was cool. I know we're trying to wrap up, but can we talk about the brilliance of the weightlessness in the troubadour scene?
Oh, that was nice. Awesome.
Yeah, that was nice.
Oh, yeah, that capture that jump that everybody that lasts for like 5 minutes or whatever it is. It's just
it feels like it lasts forever.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that was brilliantly done.
It was awesome.
I'd never seen it like that element, and it seemed so like he tapped into something that I'm like, wow, that feels so real that I've never seen expressed that way before.
But you felt it at a concert before.
Absolutely. Mm-hmm. Absolutely. Mm-hmm. Like where everybody's just rising up because it's you're in that moment. It's just, yeah, that was pretty amazing. So, well, cool. Okay, we'll go down and rate it. Ashley, what do you got?
Yeah, I'm going to give it 4.5 stars. I really enjoyed it. It's a really fun, colorful film. There's more tragedy to it than I was expecting, but I think it's an authentic story. Love the music. And Like I said, solid 4.5 stars. I'm saving that other half star until they make it into a Broadway musical. I really want it to be a Broadway musical. So that's what I'm going to give it.
Okay. Michelle?
Scale of 5?
Scale of 5.
5.
Okay. All right. Any last words about it?
Okay. No. Wow.
She's like, she just dropped the mic. Boom. 5. Oh, done.
5. Done. All right.
I'm on the floor.
It's just a beautiful statement. It's a quality film.
Awesome. Alex?
It's strange to say that a musical, a fantasy musical biopic is one of the most real things that I've gotten to see over the last few years. I'm putting it at 4.5 gold albums, and I'm going to reserve my other half for the off-Broadway production of this using puppets.
There you go.
Done by the people who do Avenue Q.
There you go. It's
simply because I just want to see a puppet with a giant headdress. That's really all I'm after at this point.
Well, we did. He was on the Muppet Show.
Yes, he was.
Crocodile Rock, right? Yep. Yeah. Crocodile Rock. Very, very famous number that they did. Yeah. Mike, what about you?
I'm going to give it a 5. It probably is one of the most enjoyable, satisfying movies I've seen in quite a long time. And I'm going to go out and say it. I enjoyed it more than Bohemian Rhapsody. So yeah. I did. And I'm looking forward to owning it. So it should be cool.
Gonna own it.
I would own it, brother.
I there's no way I can give this any less than a 4.5. I'm still processing it, and I guess maybe it's just because maybe with Elton I just don't have a strong personal connection to give it a 5, but not certainly because of anything that the filmmakers or the performers did. It's an excellent top-notch movie that does need to get more attention. I agree with all of that. And you know, it's amazing when the Titans go on a rampage. No, I'm sorry, that's the wrong one. Wait, this is the same movie, right? The Titan goes on a rampage.
Dude, the bitch is back. Come on,
exactly. And I'm still gonna have the songs in my head. That's the only thing I would caution people. Like, be warned. You will start singing various, not just one, not just two, various Elton John songs will pop in your head now.
22 of them.
Maybe the rest of your life.
They'll never go away.
So it does need to come with a warning that way. So, well, all right. Very cool. Well, we're done with the movie and the man. So we will be right back to close it out after the ESO Network Con. I think it's gonna be a long, long time. Touchdown brings me round again to find I'm not the man they think I am at home. Oh no, 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 I'm a rocket man. Rocket man, burning out his fuse, our hair is long.
Welcome to A Geek Girl's Take. I'm your host, Angela, and this week this Geek Girl is talking about the Netflix movie Patrick. So, Patrick is an odd movie for me to talk about. If you know me, then a movie about pugs is pretty obvious why I would love it, since I own 2 pugs. But it has really nothing to do with fandom, except for 2 reasons. When I sat down to watch this movie, I had no idea that Peter Davison and Bernard Cribbins, 2 of the actors from Doctor Who, were also in this movie. But I kind of should have figured, in a British comedy, I would see some Doctor Who actors. Patrick is the story of Sarah, who inherits a cute little pug named Patrick from her grandmother. Sarah hates dogs. However, over the course of this movie, she has to overcome obstacles that help her come closer to Patrick and love him as part of her family. This movie is incredibly funny, has an extremely well-trained pug. Holy cow, I wish my pugs were this well-trained. And has some great acting in it. The story is fun and is one you could watch by yourself or with your family, since it's a British comedy for all ages. And did I mention there was an adorable, cute pug in it? Yeah, that basically sold this movie for me without needing to know anything else about it. And I was pleasantly surprised when I watched it because it was really fun and very heartwarming. Well, thanks for listening to A Geek Girl's Take. What will I talk about next week? Well, you're going to have to listen to find out. And I think it's going to be a long, long time.
for the week of June 14th, 2019. It's the ESO Network Con Report.
Well, you can find ESO Network folks starting this weekend, June 14th through the 16th, at Heroes Con in Charlotte, North Carolina. In fact, I will be there. I don't have a table, so I won't be set up, but this is the first time I'm returning to Heroes to attend or just, yeah, to see it, to check out the show in 5 years. I can't believe it's been 5 years. This show is one that I love, and I used to go to every year. But things happened and I just couldn't get around to going there. There was conflict between other shows that we were doing, et cetera, et cetera. So, yeah, I had to miss out. So, this year I'm back.
You'll go in there and go, finally, Mike Gordon has returned to Heroes Con.
No, I'm just going to say howdy.
I think the other way better.
I think that's what people expect. If I came out and I didn't say howdy, they'd be like, who are you? So I'm very happy. I'm very excited. There's a lot of talented artists and writers and comic folks at Heroes, and I'll be doing some recording. So, as a matter of fact, you'll be able to hear some segments that I'm doing, for in the next episode. So, if you can't make it for whatever reason, just tune in next week and we'll, play some of that stuff for you. We'll bring a little bit of Heroes Con to you. So very excited. And speaking of Comic-Cons, there's actually two that are happening in the Atlanta area that Mike and I are going to be part of in different ways. July 12th through the 14th is the Atlanta Comic-Con. That is the big three-day show that's at the Georgia World Congress Center. Mike and I will be doing panels on Saturday.
Yes.
Are we ready to announce what those are, or is it still kind of hush-hush?
We can finally announce.
Finally,
Atlanta Comic Con, Saturday at 11 a.m. So you want to start a podcast featuring Mike Faber, Mike Gordon, and Mike Faulkner, a panel of Mikes talking about podcasting. I think that'll also be pretty cool.
Yeah, that'll be great. You know, our last year when we did the podcasting panel, man, that got real. I mean, it was really intense and really fun, and made a difference to some people. And that was pretty cool. So I'm looking forward to experiencing that again.
Exactly. And we got a great audience, and we'll record it again for our Patreon. So, you know, it should be a lot of fun. Then at 1:30 PM through 2:30 PM, the MCU, What Now? Now that, you know, we have Endgame behind us, and Spider-Man, actually, by the time we go to this con, will be behind us also. What's next? What kind of films? What can we expect from the Marvel comic universe? Will we see some X films? Will we see some Fantastic Four? Will we see Deadpool show up? That's the question we're going to ask. It's going to be a lot of fun.
Absolutely. Yeah, it's going to be a great time. And there's a lot of great guests that are appearing at this show. So I'm planning to have a lot of fun at this show, hanging around mainly on Saturday. Not sure if I'm going to go the other days or not, but we'll be definitely there on Saturday. So come by and see us on the panels and say howdy. And then the couple weeks after that, July 28th, is the one-day comic show called the Atlanta Comic Convention, the original ACC, if you will. It's a great show. It's a much smaller show, but don't take anything away from that, because it's got a lot of energy, a lot of great deals there, a lot of great talent. There's a lot of great artists and young independent folks that are at this show. And a lot of cosplay. It's been getting a lot of great costumes over the last year or so. So Mike and I will be there. We won't have a table, won't be doing panels, but we'll be there shopping around, hanging out, talking to folks. So if you're planning to go to that show or any show that we just mentioned, please reach out to us and let us know you're going to be there. We can hook up, say howdy, share stories, that kind of thing. And certainly if there's a show that we didn't mention, that you want us to mention on the show or talk about, promote, participate in, what have you, reach out to us, because we love, love, love talking about convention.
So that's going to wrap up another episode of the Earth Station One podcast. I want to thank everyone for being here and talking a lot of Elton John. Ricky and Bambi are already probably tucked into bed already, so thank you for joining us earlier. But of course, let's thank our other guests for being here. Michelle, thank you so, so much for being with us the whole episode.
Thanks for having me.
I think it's the first time she's been here with a whole episode, isn't it?
Yes.
Pretty much, I think so. So you survived all the segments. Wow.
Woohoo!
All right. Got to give her a badge for that now.
Yep.
You're now off probation status. You're full-time member now.
Oh, wow. What an honor.
Oh, of course, you know. Anything you want to shout out about?
Nope.
Nope.
Have you posted to your blog lately?
Well, not since my last Rock and Roll Hall of Fame post, but the blog is iconicrocktalkshow.wordpress.com.
Yeah, because you weren't able to talk this week, like about Dr. John's passing and a few others.
Yep, we'll hit that next week.
Awesome. And Ashley,
death count.
We should just change it to Michelle's musical death count.
Oh. Classic rock death tally.
Oh. This week makes two. Okay, all right, we're getting out of hand here. All right, Ashley, thank you.
Oh, thank you. Always love chatting movies with you guys.
Always great. Anything you want to shout out about?
Yes, I realized I had forgotten to do this last week. I want to give a shout out to the Earth Station DCU crew. They let me come on to talk about the season finale of Arrow. Always enjoy chatting about Arrow with them, so be sure to check out their feed. They have lots of great content.
That would be awesome. And what did you think? How did Arrow fare this season? Because it's now that they've announced it's wrapping up.
I think I liked the first half more than the second half. I really liked the Oliver in prison storyline. I think they did a lot of interesting things with that. The latter half of the season had some up and downs, but overall, I'm looking forward to the next season. And even though it's always sad to see a TV show end, I think it's probably time to wrap things up. So I'm glad that they're going to be closing that out, and hopefully it'll be a satisfying ending. I could just have to wait and see.
That would be awesome. You know, see what happens, how they wrap up the show with the Crisis on Infinite Earths. Ooh.
Yes. Hopefully, if he's got to go out, it'll be in an epic way. So I'm looking forward to that.
Of course. And of course, Alex, thank you, my friend.
Oh, glad to be here.
Anything you want to shout out about, sir?
I want to give an interesting shout out tonight, as opposed to what I normally do. And
well, you always shout out to Ashley. So,
Oh,
man.
This past Friday, I had the pleasure of going to Southern Honor Wrestling in Canton, Georgia. And let's face it, we're in the South. It is not what you would consider an overly open area. And I got to see two wrestlers compete against each other, Ashton Starr and Effie. Both of these men are open homosexuals. They put on a match against each other that brought the house down. They were phenomenal. They were fabulous. And 400 plus fans in attendance, after seeing them perform, sang happy birthday to Effie because it was his birthday.
Oh, wow. And that is awesome.
Yeah, it is an amazing experience. I am hoping that someone's got this on video. And if there is video, I will post it on ESO. There's a great moment when all the stereotypes and all the things that you think could happen at a place are completely shattered. And so I just want to applaud both Ashton and Effie, and send a shout out to the great folks at Southern Honor Wrestling for putting on an amazing show, and especially in Canton, Georgia, putting on a match like that.
That is awesome. Fantastic, sir. Now, sometimes the smaller, you know, organizations put on a lot more show because these guys are hungry. These guys have the heart, and, you know, get to see some amazing stuff.
And the Canton, they do a show the first Friday of every month, and they literally, Ashton Starr is a phenomenon in that building. The fans adore him. And they could have gone for the cheap heat. They could have done that, and they didn't. They allowed his talent to show through, and it does.
Oh, that is awesome. That is awesome. Well, very cool. And Mr. Mike, we made it through another one, sir.
We did. This was fun.
This was a fun. It was
absolutely
fun.
Absolutely. Yeah. Talking about Elton John a lot. So, and as always, it's my pleasure.
Yep. Of course. It's always great to talk to you. What do you have to shout out about, buddy?
I'm going to give a shout out to two very good friends of the station, two very dear friends that, got officially hitched this weekend, and that is Ryan Cadaver and Nicole, otherwise known as Battle Cougar. They actually made it official this weekend, and are Mr. and Mrs. Cadaver, or I think the hashtag is Cadaver Forever or Cadaver. I think it's something like that. Anyway, I'm so happy for them. They are like for the longest time since I've known them. I think they've been together. They just fit well together. They're like a real life Gomez and Morticia. They are pretty, although they rock a lot harder than the Addams Family folks do. But they're just great folks, and I wish them all the happiness in the world.
Hear, 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 hear. All right, my shout out real quick is to Amazon. I was thrilled and really excited that they were doing a version of Good Omens. And then I was a little worried about that they were doing a version of Good Omens after watching American Gods and this last two seasons. And then I watched the For American Said, of course, Good Omens, and basically was thrilled and loved it. I just want to tell people to watch it. It is amazing. If you have Amazon Prime, it is truly an amazing show, and it's not that long. It's just a couple episodes, and it's a one and done. They're not planning a second season. They're not planning on extending it, and it was awesome. And it's humorous, it's fun, and it's fantasy, and it's Neil Gaiman. It's pretty darn awesome. This is what I was hoping American Gods was going to be, but we're going to be talking about this Good Omens in a few weeks. We're going to be doing an episode about it, so I'm not going to spoil anything now, but just go see it. Go watch it. It's worth it. Truly, truly worth it. All right. That's going to wrap up this episode. Want to give a quick shout out to everyone who's supporting us. Always a reminder, please, please, please subscribe to our show on whatever media player that you listen to. We're up on most of them, or wherever fine podcasts are found. So please give us a listen. And we will be back again next week when we are going to do an artist spotlight on Karl Barks. That's right, folks. We are going to be talking all about Karl Barks and his work on a lot of his Uncle Scrooge stuff. It's going to be pretty awesome. So until then, my name is Mike Faber. We will see you here next time on the Air Station One podcast. Peace. And we're done. Boom.
I swear to you, I heard you say Karl Marx, and I was like, what?
You've been listening to the Air Station One podcast, a show by fans for fans. If you enjoyed the show, please subscribe to our show up on iTunes or wherever fine podcasts are found. While you're up there, please rate us and remember to leave feedback. It would greatly be appreciated. And remember to tell your friends all about us while you're at it. Air Station One is available on most social media sites where you can join some really great topics or chats. Help support our show by shopping through our Amazon.com link or purchasing very cool ESO Network clothing and merchandise at our TeePublic store. Links to both are found on the top of our ESO Network webpage. Become a patron of the ESO Network by backing us up on Patreon for as little as 25 cents a week. Go to patreon.com/ESO Network to sign up. We want to hear from you. Please write us at earthstation1@esonetwork.com or call us at 404-963-9057. Thanks for listening, and we'll see you next time here on the Earth Station 1 podcast. Peace, and we're done.
This has been a broadcast of the ESO Network. Be part of the crew and help support our shows by donating to our ESO Patreon or by shopping through Amazon.com or the TeePublic store, which can all be found at www.esonetwork.com. The ESO Network, your station for all things geek.